So I'm really glad all of you are here. On one level, I'm really glad that we're getting to do this. On another level, I'm going to be working my butt off to make all of this in some way applicable to your future as photographers. I thought about this class for a long time. I've spent a lot of time working on it and preparing and getting the materials and all this stuff. What I don't want is to come out of this class and have taught you a skill where we started in the middle and we finished in the middle, and the whole thing has very little to do with your future as photographers, right? What I don't want to do is teach you a skill that is like oil painting is to a graphic artist. It may be a lot of fun, but it's very hard for graphic artists to make a living in 2018 doing oil painting. It doesn't say that there's anything wrong with being an artist for art's sake. It doesn't say there's anything wrong with approaching this technology for that, but it does say we're here in a commercial arts school. And the reason that the thing that I want you to get out of this class that is most important to me is that you get such a deep level of understanding of how photography works that when the next changes come in, and you know Nikon is going to introduce a new whole camera line probably in weeks, right? Canon's going to introduce one. If you understand photography at a deep level, these changes are not going to be as difficult for you as if you sort of surf on top of digital photography and you know how to use your camera. So this is where we get to the deep understanding. However, getting there will not necessarily be pleasant. We have to understand the technology and the way that technology evolved, because in 1980, we'd had film for a long time and it hadn't changed much. In 1990, we had the same product. In 1960, it was about the same product. And then suddenly, you know, in 2000, we have a whole different ball of wax, right? In order for us to understand photography, we can, what takes photography and decides how it's all going to work is the film or the sensor, right? If somebody comes up with a whole different sensor design, that's going to possibly create a whole new level of camera design, right? Say that somebody comes up with a better phone sensor. We already know what happens, right? Everybody sells their iPhone 8s or iPhone 7s or whatever and runs out to buy iPhone 10s. So the first week today, we're going to talk about film. We're going to talk about film and get a camera yet. I kind of expected that, you know. So you guys are going to have a good time. You're going to work your butts off, I hope. But you're also going to have access to stuff. This isn't happening again, right? So for all that I'm sitting here telling you, it's going to be the toughest class you take. It may be the toughest class you love. I hope so, because God, I love this stuff. I mean, I'm sitting here playing with an 11 by 14 camera. This is what I do for a good time. This is shot with a camera that shoots an 11 by 14 inch piece of film, right? This is shot with a camera that shoots an 11 by 14 inch piece of film. I've got a show coming in November. Most of them are going to be finished prints that are cyanotypes. You're going to see how to make cyanotypes. You can make cyanotypes from your digital cameras if you want to. We'll talk about how you do that. In the beginning, 1839, there are two people who managed to work out the last problem. There are people who knew about the fact that you could make a light-sensitive material out of silver, out of tar, maybe out of iron, I don't know. You could make all these light-sensitive materials. They knew about that in the 18th century, right? That's the 1700s. What they could not do was fix the image. So they could figure out how to make it, they just couldn't make it stable, right? So you've got these, but it doesn't matter. Then, in 1839, two separate groups of people managed to figure out how to make the image stable. The first one, I don't like Daguerre. I don't like daguerreotypes. I don't think the guy's my idea of, wow, because the process doesn't go any further. And he's working on a guy named, on the work that was started by a guy named Niepce. And try to pronounce that three times quickly. And the way it's spelled has absolutely nothing to do with the guy's name. He's working on this guy's work. We got no idea how it actually happened, but he figured out how to make daguerreotypes, and they are cool to look at. And if we'd been taking the design class, I'd have brought in a daguerreotype for you to look at, but that didn't happen. At the same time, there's a guy named Fox Talbot, William Henry Fox Talbot. That's a lot of names for a guy, isn't it? He's in England in a place called Leacock Abbey. And I will send you the link to his book, Pencil of Nature. He created the first photography book. He filled it up with actual prints. What he did was made a negative material and made prints from it. Everything that we did from film, from that moment in 1839 to today when you're shooting film, comes out of that basic process and experiments. His first material to make the image stable was table salt. Lots of table salt. Then a guy comes along, and his name is Herschel. See if I got his name written down so that I get it right, but it doesn't matter. Well, it does, but sir. Anyway, and he figures out that you can use a chemical called sodium thiosulfate, and there will not be a quiz that requires you to remember the name of that chemical, that will take the sensitive material out of a print so that you will only be left with the stable material. And that chemical is what we use today to process film. Lots of chemicals develop film. And we'll talk about that in just a moment. But this was the fixer, and the fixer's more important than the developer, right? Because there's only a very few fixers. There's a gazillion developers. There's a person out there who figured out that you could, if you wanted to wait long enough, develop film in old Burgundy wine. I don't know why you would want to. There are cities in this country where supposedly, if you wait 2 or 3 weeks, you can process film with normal tap water. Maybe Flint, Michigan, I don't know. But there's lots of chemicals, there's lots of things out there that will develop. But fixing the image, that's the big deal. Does this make sense so far? So what we have here with film is a crystal generally of silver bromide. Once again, I'm not giving you a chemistry class, right? I'm not going to require you to remember these things, but let's just, that's the crystal of silver bromide there. When light hits this crystal, now it's a crystal, it's not a single molecule. It is not one silver bromide molecule, like one silver atom. It is a bunch of them as a crystal, right? Like you've seen a big quartz crystal, right? Everybody's probably seen that, right? Big, you know, or little or whatever. People wear them around like they're going to be somehow magical. And if you look at the early Star Treks, dilithium crystals are nothing more than quartz crystals. So we're just waiting for them to figure out this. Anyway, a photon, that is a single unit of light, comes and hits the crystal, boom. In the crystal, it makes an incredibly teeny change. Just one molecule out of that crystal is reduced from silver bromide to silver. It's metallic silver. Now, if we throw developer on this product, and as I said, there's a lot of developers out there, metal, hydroquinone, then the whole crystal turns into metallic silver. Silver bromide is essentially clear in sufficient quantities. It's not, but for our purposes, real thin coatings. Silver, reduced silver, is black. It's metal silver, but instead, we think of it as shiny, right? Black. So when we look at a real photographic print, I have one here, I think. Stop. Made those in my darkroom yesterday. The black is silver. The white on this particular paper is titanium. We don't really care. On a traditional photographic paper, it's a barium clay. Baryta, which is another word. I often pronounce things poorly. It's the way it goes. Anyway, so we have now this silver. The problem is there are all these other molecules around here, all these other crystals, which didn't see the light, and they need to be removed because they're sensitive to light, right? And if you give enough light, then a piece of clear photographic paper that should be white like this is eventually going to get an exposure like this. Thank you. I appreciate your acknowledgement. These days I'll take acknowledgement anywhere I can get it. So, you need to stabilize this stuff. So you take this thing and you put it in fixer, and then all of these unexposed molecules go away. Right? Makes sense. And they figured that out basically in about 1839. Great! Yay, guys! We could stop there, right? No. The next, you can imagine that as soon as they figure this out, they start to think, wow, that's really cool. Let's make a lot of pictures. And they did, right? You can get a daguerreotype for just a few dollars. Daguerreotypes were made before the American Civil War. There were other people who had civil wars. Some people are having them now. I think Syria might be hosting one this week. They have an incredible look to them. Anyway, you can look in the face of somebody who died not just before your grandmother was born, but before your great-grandmother was born, right? That's kind of cool. But they start to notice there are a lot of problems. Problem number one, all this stuff is insensitive as hell. It just doesn't, it requires massive amounts of exposure. Niepce's first project used tar, and I think it took him about a week to make the exposure. At this point, it's taking hours to make an exposure on at Fox Talbot's stuff. I mean, we're talking, this stuff is insensitive. I've dated people who were that insensitive. So here we go. First thing we want to do is make this more sensitive. And the next thing we got to do is, it turns out it's only sensitive to certain colors. And when we start with this stuff, the silver bromide, it's only really sensitive to blue light. Ultraviolet, it sees ultraviolet well, but we don't. And it's sensitive to blue light. So for instance, none of the women in here, and nor the men, seem to be wearing red lipstick, bright red lipstick. But if you were wearing bright red lipstick in the early days of photography, you would have black lips. Because the film that they're using, the material they're using, is utterly incapable of seeing red. There are other colors that it can't see. In the beginning, really all it sees is blue, right? So if you're standing around, Dalton's shirt, Rahm's shirt, great. Zoe's cap, maybe her shirt, I can't. Is that, that's a sky light blue, right?
It's a blue purple shirt.
Yeah, okay, really bright. Amanda's shirt, black, right? Kylie's shirt. I'm working on making sure I still have the names here. You notice that. Black.
Becky.
I've got everybody. Isn't that exciting? I'm excited. There's one person in this class who's supposed to be here that I haven't met yet, but they're not here, so doing well. Anyway, your shirt would be dark gray, except for the part right here, right? Which would be bright blue, bright white, right? So this stuff, how do we deal with this problem? Well, the next thing that they start to do is start to make this stuff more sensitive. Bigger crystals are more sensitive. Different shaped crystals are more sensitive. You're the person I do not know.
Okay, Felicia.
Felicia, you're the only person in here I do not know. There's going to be a quiz at the end of class for you. You missed the quiz at the beginning of class, but that's another story. All right. What they do is take dyes. You're wearing dyes in your clothes, right? They take dye molecules and they put it around this silver molecule, this silver crystal. When your blue hat reflects light to me, it also absorbs red. That means that in absorbing a photon, this little, it's reflecting blue, but the red hit it and it absorbs the photon. When that absorbed photon kicks into this silver molecule, suddenly the silver molecule is exposed and we can develop it. So instead of having film that is only sensitive to blue light, we now have film. It's still a gray medium. It's still, we don't have color images yet, right? But we have an image that is going to see a difference between Felicia's hairband and Felicia's hair. When we start out, there's no difference. They're both black. This is important to the way we actually see, isn't it? You don't see these. When you think about converting an image to black and white, if you decide that, oh, I took an image, but it's all right in color, but maybe I'll make it in black and white and that'll make it better. You don't have an expectation that Kylie's shirt is going to go to black, right? We want to see in black and white the way we expect to see in black and white. Remember, these people had made drawings with pencils before this. Black and white's not new. It's not like they've never seen a monochrome image before. They see monochrome images in their newspapers, little drawings, right? I mean, this is before you got court reporters making things in nice watercolors. So we have suddenly a material that can now see color. And this is about 1910, 1907, something like that. I wrote down my dates here earlier. There's a guy named Mies. I mentioned him earlier. C.E.K. Mies. He's working for a company called Ratten and Wainwright in England. And they figure out how to make a great panchromatic plate. It's pretty sensitive to light, not by our standards, but by their standards, and it sees all the colors of light. Why have we never heard of this company when they did it first? Anyone want to hazard a... Because Kodak went and bought them. George Eastman ran, I'm going to buy the whole company! And he relocates Mies from England, which is where he is, to Rochester, which is where Kodak is, right? And Mies runs Kodak Labs. Quite possibly, well, certainly one of the biggest chemical lab, industrial chemical labs in the world. From about 1910, something like that. 1915, it's before the war anyway, before the First World War. All the way up until the 1940s when they make ektachrome. One guy is managing all of this. This is an incredible thing. The stories of what he knew are unfortunately incomprehensible because they're all about chemistry. But there you go. Anyway, so that means we finally have an emulsion that works pretty good. Now, George Eastman did something really freaking amazing, right? Besides, I mean, we think of Eastman Kodak, right? And do we anybody care to tell me what George Eastman did pretty much on his own? That'd be a no. Okay. George Eastman created film base. Film before Eastman. Maybe there were other people messing with it, but you're either putting your emulsion, this silver bromide stuff with the dye and all that crap, onto paper or onto glass. Think about glass for a minute. I mean, clearly, it breaks, right? You have Edward Curtis, the guy who took all those wonderful pictures of the American Indians at the beginning of the 20th century, running around with a burro full of glass plates. When Ansel Adams started out, he was still working with glass plates, although he didn't necessarily have to be, but that was what he was doing. And he had a burro in Yosemite. I mean, an assistant is one thing. We're talking about a small horse, right? This stuff weighs a lot. It's heavy. It's hard to work with. It is a gigantic pain in the butt. Do I make myself clear? Eastman comes along and he creates clear plastic strips. Film. A great moment. And what happens is the big company before Eastman Kodak is a company called Anthony. You've never heard of Anthony, right? They're all kinds of photographic stuff. You find them in the old catalogs. Everything for sale is for sale from Anthony. They're like the Sears of photography now, the Amazon of photography, right? And Eastman Kodak kills them off. Because Eastman Kodak comes out with a camera and says, you press the button, we do the rest. And why can they do that? Because they've got flexible film. They can put a roll of film through a camera. Now, this doesn't seem like a big deal, but imagine glass plates, right? You're out there trying to take pictures of your kids running around playing. I mean, unless you're Sally Mann, nobody does this. It's another sign that Sally Mann might be a little crazy, right? Today, you haven't ever had to load a camera. But in those days, at least you could load a camera with 8, 12, 16, 24 pictures. It's a big deal. The first thing Kodak made, it took 100 pictures, round pictures. And you would send the whole camera to Kodak. And they would unload the camera. They would process the Kodak camera. They would send you back your prints. And for another 10 bucks, they'd send you back your camera loaded with film again. That was a big deal. It's the first time that you don't have to have anything going on and you can take a picture. It's like the phone camera of the day, right? And it blows everything else out of the moment. Gone, right? That's film. That's what we work with in this class, right? Does this make sense to everybody? Does anybody have any questions? So it's nitrate-based film. If you see this stuff today, it is unstable and also rather flammable. You hear stories about, the other thing they did with this stuff immediately, right, was they stuffed it in, they tried to make a movie camera, which they did. Edison is the guy who figured out how to make the movie camera. The Lumiere brothers, who we'll talk about in a few minutes, also made a movie camera. There were other people who made movie cameras, but you had to have film. You can't make a movie camera with glass plates, right? You have Edward, I try very hard to pronounce his name with all the letters in it, Edward Muybridge, taking all these pictures of human and animal movement. I don't know if, I didn't bring any of those today, but he takes them with multiple glass plate cameras, and he's got like 20 glass plate cameras, and they go bing, 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 bing down the row, and so you can watch somebody walk. But he doesn't, until much later, figure out a way to put it together so you can actually see movement. You see movement in individual motions, right? Which is great if you're an artist. He very strange guy. The last guy in the United States to be given a in court, they gave him the result of justifiable homicide. It's the last time in this country anybody's had the result of the verdict is justifiable homicide. And he killed the guy he thought was his wife's lover. So Edward is probably a reasonable way of saying his name. He's not a nice, very strange, very, very strange guy, but worth looking into. Anyway, so Edison comes along, who's weird in and of himself, right? And he makes this motion picture camera, and they start making movies, and the stuff moves, and it's just unbelievable. People are like, wow, because they were blown away with single images. Now they can see somebody walk. They can't hear them talk yet, that's way in the future, but they can see somebody move, somebody sneeze. That was an early movie, it was pictures of somebody sneezing. It was a big deal, people really liked that. A movie of somebody sneezing. I mean, you know, this wouldn't go over today. It's not exactly the latest Star Wars film, is it? It would do less well than Solo. Anyway, so they make movies, but they're making them on this nitrate-based film. And one of the problems is later on, this stuff starts to sort of spontaneously explode in the projectors. Bad, bad thing if you happen to be in the theater. There were a lot of theater fires from way, 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 way back because they used to, you know, go watch the theater at night and they'd have fire creating the light on the stage. That's, you ever heard the phrase limelight? It's an early kind of lighting. It's very bright, but it's also basically fire. And so you did have theater fires, and you had circus fires, and people dying horribly, and all this stuff. yeah, isn't that lovely? But anyway, suddenly we have film, we can make movies, we can make still pictures, and the big deal here is daguerreotypes were single images. You made one, you could copy it and make another, but it didn't look right. When you make one negative, you can make 100,000 prints. Be a pain in the butt to do, but you can do it, right? Suddenly, you have the ability to make multiple images. When you look at Pencil of Nature, if you do, and it takes about, I don't know, 3 or 4 hours to read, if that, it's real simple. Look at the pictures anyway when I send you the link. Just look at the pictures, right? Because you're looking back into history. Anyway, every book was made with prints from the original negatives. They didn't have a mechanical way of printing stuff like in a newspaper or something today where you see a picture, or in a book, you see a picture. Instead of being like, here we go. These are ink reproductions, right? So it's not the original photograph. It's not made in silver, right? When you look at Pencil of Nature, the original ones are actual prints because they didn't have a way of doing this yet. This is part of the way in which photography evolves, is so you can find ways to produce this stuff in mass. Very important. All right, I have just muttered on for 50 minutes. It is time for a break. If anyone has any questions,